Hey, Thomas.
Hey, where's I'm here.
Why are you talking so slow?
Oh, that's good.
Mikey, Star Trek, all things are slow now. So why are we here?
Well, because it's for the movie review this week.
I am last runner.
This is the only way we watch it. Why?
Have you seen that movie?
This way goes to normal. Oh man. Sci-fi, man, system 161. I am last on earth watching Drive.
Hello, sickies, to another... Okay, I can't do it that way anymore. Welcome back. Belay that phaser order. You know what? That scene... Sickies, today we're doing week two of Apocalypse August, the sequel. We're doing the Netflix movie Io, Last on Earth. And what Scott just did is actually somehow... faster than what this film is in terms of pace. If the title doesn't tell you, you'll find out as we describe it, because this movie, I can explain to you right now, as I was watching it, I texted to Scott and Thomas the word glacial, but I did it letter by letter by letter, spelling the word out, and I waited a minute between each, because that's how this movie feels. And I guess the big problem, if I could just lay the cards out on the table right now, is that you get some movies like Episode 9 where they're just so busy trying to keep the action moving that you never get a chance to sit down and take a breather and see what's going on. It's almost like they're trying to hide how weak the story is. This movie is the complete opposite. This movie just slows the story down to such a point that you feel like you're on drugs, or that I don't know. It feels honestly like the story was a 10-page short story. Someone in Netflix picked it up and then decided, well, we have to fill out 90 minutes, so let's just drag this out.
This movie makes Star Trek, the motion picture, seem like Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Yep. Thomas? Yep.
Now, admittedly, I'm going to say this film has a good idea.
Yeah, I would agree.
And some of the scenes, and I say some, were done well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they did do some things right. Premise was right. Boy, I think the execution fell flat.
Oh, without a doubt. As I said, had this been like a Dark Mirror episode, a Black Mirror episode or something like that, it might have worked out okay.
Well, also, maybe? it might have worked out much better also if the story was stronger.
Yeah.
Because I'm sorry, there was not a single surprise in this film. I knew every single twist from a mile away.
Well,
so there was no twist.
When the movie is moving at sloth pace, any surprise you see coming just by virtue of the fact of this is so slow, I see exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, if they had been able to actually do a twist or some kind of plot turn that was completely unexpected, it probably would have helped this film.
A little bit. I mean, you still would have had pacing issues. But yeah, at least there would have been something to break up the monotony.
I think the problem with this movie is that it never got past the high concept stage. Somebody just sat there and said that I've got this high concept idea that the Earth is uninhabitable for some reason, and we're going to focus on two people left on Earth and try to tell a story about the value of human connection.
Mm. Yeah.
And it never moved beyond that. There's details that never really got fleshed out. The Earth is uninhabitable because something turned the atmosphere toxic. I don't know what, but something.
They say is pollution of some kind caused the atmosphere to become so toxic that no one could live.
Which,
like, wow.
That's feasible enough for science fiction. And I would take that any day of the week over mutating subatomic particles. Because pollution ruining the atmosphere, all right, that could happen. How much? If there's only a question of how much and how long and to the details, the nitty gritty is the question. But is it feasible? Well, yeah, at least some parts. But a mutating subatomic particle?
That's just not possible.
What?
Yeah. I do get that. Again, the concept was solid. Mm-hmm. Pollution causing a disaster. No one can live on Earth. Now people are escaping to a new, you know, planetary savior ship or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you have few people left on Earth, not yet escaped, and some of them doing studies. Fantastic.
Sure.
The concept is like perfect. You can make a powerful story, but you have to actually tell a story.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember how long it was. Now, the book, I'm going to say this. The Book of Eli did it very well that it took so long to say the first, like, lines.
Mm-hmm.
But it was setting a scene. It was setting a mood.
Right.
This one kind of did the same thing. Kinda. It was setting a mood. It was setting a stage. I mean, no one talks for so long. But then there's just continues to do that.
Right. And that's, I think, you know what this reminds me of? Ben Stein reading a post-apocalyptic story. Just, let's just say, I don't know the year, but let's just say it's 2028. In 2028, the atmosphere was damaged beyond repair. This is the Ben Stein of post-apocalyptic movies.
Yeah, but you put too much feeling in those words when you were saying it.
You approach an enclave. The enclave appears to have multiple types of vegetation around it.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Would you like the roll to figure out what the vegetation is?
Hey, calm down, man. Calm down. I was getting worked up. So now that you've basically gotten a gist of, we're going to rate it, Sickies, but by this point, you should kind of get an idea how we're going to rate it. So before we do that, though, let's really let you know what you're getting into. Let's give you the basics of the film, and then I'll describe the plot, which will be quicker than it'll be.
There's
a plot, sorta, kinda. Look, what I'm going to do, I will make a plot out of this. And I'll be quicker about it. But first, let's go over the specs. What do we got, Scott?
Well, we got a Netflix original here and not one of their finest. This would go back to Hollywood winning over Netflix on this one and that old symptom that we did. But this was a Netflix distribution exclusive January 18th, 2019, produced by Mandalay Pictures, directed by Jonathan Helpert. I keep thinking of Jim Helpert, but directed by Jonathan Helpert, produced by Jason Michael Berman, and written by Clay Jeter, Charles Spano, and Will Basanta. It stars Margaret Qualley and Sam Wilson, otherwise known as Falcon, Anthony Mackie, and Danny Hudson. And the minimalist score, when there is a score, is done by Henry Jackman and Alex Belcher. Principal photography began in October 16. They switched out the original leads from Elle Fanning and Diego Luna, but they ended up switching that out, and they ended up getting Margaret Qualley and Anthony Mackie. I don't see a budget on this, and I don't see a box office because there isn't a box office, but I can't believe that this thing is one of Netflix's successes. Rotten Tomatoes gives it 31% with a weighted average of 5.05 out of 10.
I know there was no audience score on this one, which I don't know if that's good or bad, but
Metacritic is 40 out of 100. And Nick Allen of Roger Ebert gave it 2 out of 5 stars.
Wow, he was nice.
The highest rating out of them is IMDb at 4.7.
Wow, somebody really likes slow movies. Does it happen? Well,
that's the highest.
Does it happen to say if this came from a book or anything, or where the name Io comes from?
Oh, it's the moon. Orbiting the moon.
Well, I guess I forgot that because I was trying to stay awake.
They're also, it's the first injection of Greek mythology into the film that we'll just come back to over and over again. And whatever that scene was at the end with trying to compare Sam to Helen of Troy in the face that launched 1,000 ships.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, don't forget, you also have that whole bit where isn't he reading Plato or something?
Yeah. And Zeus is the swan in disguise. And
yeah.
Like, so is he Zeus? He's Zeus. She's Helen. The child is one of the children of the gods.
Yeah, really reaching for the stars on that one.
I think I might have just blew my deep meaning right there.
Well, you know what? Let's just get in.
Wait, there was a deep meaning?
Yeah. Well, Scott's looking into that. While he's looking into that, let me go over the basic plot here. So you have the two main characters, pretty much the only characters in this, are, there's Sam. And what's the girl's name again?
Sam is the girl. Micah is the guy.
Oh, Sam and
Sam Walden.
Sam Walden and Micah, who cares?
Micah someone.
I just said who cares. So Sam Walden, what happens in the future is some kind of pollution occurs that makes the Earth hostile to live in. And so everybody gets on these essentially ark ships and flees to Jupiter. And they're just hanging around Jupiter looking for a place to go while people slowly kind of trickle away from Earth. Sam's father is insisting that there's no other planet like Earth, which, okay, he's right for our biology, and that we need to stay there and try to wait till the Earth reaches equilibrium or find a way to make it happen. And so adapt. And what he's doing is he's conducting experiments on plants and bees to see if what happens is, because essentially the air becomes ammonia, except for high altitude places, except of course the ammonia is kind of seeping in. So although humans can handle it at high altitudes, the plants or the bees cannot. So they're just checking to see when they survive, see if they adapt. Which is funny because in Darwinian evolution, adaptation takes like millions of years. So I don't know why this guy would think that, but that's neither here nor there. So it happens that he goes out to collect some samples and dies, leaving Sam at their base. And she just essentially is going around the nearby cities, looking for all forms of life to see if they have adapted. She also has a lover on the Ark ship. I forget his name and who cares because we never meet him.
Elon.
We don't even get to Elon Musk. We never see him. There's not even a conversation with him. There's just voice recordings. And he keeps just begging, come with me, come with me, come with me. And eventually Micah shows up in a hot air balloon. And he's trying to find out where the nearest ship is leaving. And then it turns out that the nearest ship is going to be leaving and that's it. No more. We're abandoning Earth. So Sam and Micah eventually decide to give up. And because Sam knows her dad's dead, she just keeps fooling herself into thinking otherwise. And a lot of Greek myth and museums and yada, yada, yada and stuff like that. She eventually agrees with Micah that it's time to go. So, but the problem is Micah can't get his hot air balloon filled up and the winds aren't going right to get him to that, to the rocket launch place that's changed now. And they have to go down to the city so he could fill it back up with helium.
And
while they're waiting for that, they're hanging out and she, oh yeah, before that they have sex. You see how interested I am in this movie. And at some point they spend the night down there at the museum in the city until they leave. And then Sam suddenly gets the bright idea. I don't want to leave Earth anymore. So she takes her helmet off and finds out she has adapted to ammonia. And Micah just says, well, good for you. And he gets in the balloon, goes to the rocket launch and leaves. And the movie ends with Sam on the beach with Micah's kid because she got pregnant.
I still say she died.
Yeah, it, you know what? This is one of those movies where she died, she lived, who cares?
You know,
you're just glad it's over.
As much as when we talked at the beginning, I wanted to say that I think the ending is that she dies and this is the scene that her neurons are playing out for her as she's, you know, leaving this world. I don't think so. I think the way this movie was written on the surface, they believe that somehow she's able to breathe things other than oxygen.
Well, a bee survived, remember? That she thought they all died, and then Micah found one by accident. So if the bees plants can do it.
The bee living in a high atmosphere area with some oxygen doesn't count.
Without any plants to go pollinate.
Correct. Also, let's be honest. One thing.
Ethan took a shot.
Shush, don't make him cognizant of that.
Hey, ammonia is a colorless gas, so that smog thing that we kept
purple
seeing in the
smog
movie wasn't actually accurate. Another thing being the amount of damage ammonia does to the human body is insane. It is not close to being able to be at all absorbed effectively by the human body in a way that can be usable.
It's a good thing it's not like bleach and disinfectant.
Yeah.
Well, again, can it be used? I mean, we use it for disinfecting all sorts of stuff. It works great for that, but
sure. Surfaces.
It's not like we're drinking it or that we're sitting there breathing it. I mean, breathing it's the biggie.
Yeah.
I mean, you're breathing in something that's super toxic and just destroying. And it's like your only argument is she trained her body to resist it.
Yeah.
She possessed a random mutation nobody knew about.
But it doesn't even tell you
it
that.
It makes no sense.
No, I mean, the thing being, yes, you can build up a resistance to poisons, but that still means a high enough dose of that poison will kill you.
Right. And so when was she dousing herself with ammonia? When was she going? She wasn't exactly running into the city and going, well, time to huff ammonia for a couple minutes.
No, she was. We remember that was the spots on her skin.
No, but that was at base camp, wasn't it? She wasn't going to the city and huffing ammonia for a while.
But beyond all that, aren't we supposed to believe in this, that there's only a few pockets of oxygen left? It's like the plot from Spaceballs where they lost all their atmosphere.
Yeah.
And you know, so even if she can tolerate breathing oxygen laced with ammonia, there's not supposed to be any oxygen left.
Right.
So it shouldn't matter again.
Which if that's the case, I'm no mechanic, so someone will have to correct me on this. Does that mean that she was driving an electric vehicle then? Because if there's no oxygen, how do you have internal combustion on your four-wheeler?
Hey, I got a lot of questions. Who's keeping the power going?
That's another one. Well, how's the power still working?
Yeah, I mean, did she have a never-ending supply of gasoline for her gas generator? I don't know, but I mean, it's one of these convenient post-apocalyptic movies where the computers are still running, they're still network-connected to things, and no one is left on Earth.
Well, even Micah admits, he's like, wow, you have a lot of technology. He's blown away.
I'm also confused.
That technology would die. I mean, honestly, viruses would go rampant. And you're expecting me to believe that somehow when everyone's left, the world is dying and you have a super toxic gas everywhere. somehow you still have connections to everything.
Look, my internet crashes once a week with an outage. Thanks, WoW. And there's people here to take care of it. What's going on? There's no one here to take care of it.
Right.
Right.
I can't get past the heartlessness of humanity that's in orbit around Io, where they're like, last chance. We're never coming back to get you off here again.
But here's the thing.
Yeah. And we're going to sever all communications to you, too.
I get that because the movie implies that there couldn't have been more than 20 people left. So it's one of those, look, man, we're not waiting here with the whole of humanity for you last 10 people that just want to hang out on Earth. Bye-bye. But it's kind of like... It's kind of like if you want to rescue someone from a sinking ship, and all they're doing is going, "No, I want to sit here and swim." Enjoy.
Well, okay, so I'll say, you know, maybe you can sit there and say, "Hey, this is the last shuttle off the Earth for 2 years. Best of luck, and we'll leave this communication line open in case you change your mind or you need anything."
Yeah.
Well, you've got the resources to go to Alpha Centauri.
The movie does have a response for that. They are saying that the spacecraft is right now powering up and is about to leave. So it's not even going to be in the Earth solar system.
Yeah.
Oh, Io Station is leaving too? Because yes. I thought only Elon was going on that ship.
Well, Elon is going. He's the initial scouting to Alpha Centauri.
Yeah.
But the intent is for them all to go.
Yeah, it's going to take 10 years to get to Alpha Centauri. So there's at least 10 more years where they can come back and get people off of Earth.
Yeah, I guess. But
they got to start. They can't sit in orbit of Io forever.
Yeah. And there's also resources. You have to get the rockets off there. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but you got all the humanity living on that station around Io right now. So... I don't know. I think it's kind of heartless.
All right. Well, of course you do.
I kind of get that, but I would disagree with you because, again, you only have a few survivors. You have to go. You have to go.
See, this is the other problem with the stupidity going on in this movie. And there's like 20 people left on Earth. Why are you staying at this point? What do you think you're going to accomplish?
Right. With dwindling oxygen.
Yeah.
You don't even have a viable breeding population to be able to repopulate the species with 20 people left.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh, great. Thanks for bringing that up because I just thought now you only have if you think she didn't die, that means you only have what? Eve and what?
Yvette?
Cain or Abel?
Yeah, I mean...
There's... Which one do you want, Cain or Abel here?
Maybe a couple of the other crazy cat people who with 20 cats throwing them at people like in The Simpsons hanging around to breed with. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
You only have two people who now apparently are able to survive in this ammonia.
And then one of them just left. Well, wait, that's the sun. Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my point. Ugh. You have Eve and Cain or Abel.
You didn't really think ahead, did you, movie?
And you expect us to believe that you're breeding, and you're like, come back, everyone, to a planet where you can't live on.
Exactly. That's the point.
The Earth is cooked. You can't save it. The Earth is gone. It's a dead rock in space at this point, at least for us.
Oh, by a mile.
So, right. And that's why I don't understand the nobility of the end of the movie where she's on a beach. It's like... Yay, she's on a planet that's no longer inhabitable. Is she the hero in this? Because, I mean, she didn't really do anything heroic. She just stomped her foot and said, I'm not leaving.
Well, that's another problem with this film. It really doesn't have much of a plot. I mean...
I gave you the story.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a story, but there's really not any plot. There's no conflict escalation. I mean, it's just... We're following an imbecile who refuses to want to leave the planet.
Yeah.
And we're following another guy who, before he takes the last shuttle off the planet, wants to tell off the doctor that made him stay. Yeah. So he takes a trip and he's helium balloon.
Yeah, that's right. That's why he showed up to that camp to begin with, just to yell at the doctor,
right.
Which seems kind of dumb. It's like if you know time is of the essence. Why aren't you just making a beeline to the rocket?
No one's motivation in this film makes any sense. But you don't have an antagonist. Yeah. Who's the antagonist?
The atmosphere.
You don't have a protagonist.
You're telling me this guy went to yell at a doctor, found out the doctor's dead, and then screwed the doctor's daughter?
The daughter, and then decided to leave.
Here's my revenge against you, Doc. I'm going to knock up your daughter and leave her all alone on Earth with my child.
They fell in love, which, again, as Scott pointed out, I think Star Wars had a love story between...
That's the least believable love story I've ever seen.
This was the most sterile love scene ever. Christopher Nolan writes better love scenes. And, Christopher Nolan writes love scenes... just sterile. Nothing
there's
there.
Just
I can't
no
even.
Love. There's, in, no love
there's no emotion. No. It's just, yes. It would be as if Sheldon Cooper and Amy Farrah Fowler had more love going on than these two, who were just like, I think we need to leave.
I was more convinced in the Star Trek The Next Generation episode, in theory, that Data had actually fell in love with Jenna and had feelings for her. So when the emotionless android makes me believe that he loves someone more than your two flesh and blood human leads. I mean, I'll say this. I was never a fan of Falcon. And maybe now I'm realizing that I wasn't a fan of Falcon because he's not a good actor.
I was going to disagree. I was going to say you have two actors. That
they acted well. I think their story was bad.
Yeah, exactly.
There were moments of excellent acting that was going on that it was like, this actually they're trying to portray what they're doing, and they're doing a good job.
I just think
they were given junk.
Yeah, this is the Hayden Christensen effect. You have two people that can act, but we're told the opposite. For all we know, during the love scenes, they were emoting well, and the director said, whoa, what's this? No, you need to be more boring, drab, tired, robotic. I mean, this has got to look like you just came together and finished, just the same as eating a meal.
Yeah, I feel like the, you know, every single scene they got up there and, you know, Anthony Mackie was like, so what am I going for in this scene? And Helpert was like, laconic.
Yeah.
Laconic and wooden. Can you do that? Sure.
I don't know how many.
Some emotion.
I wonder how many takes that took for them to go cut. Did I tell you, dude? No emotion.
I smiled,
but you said I'm supposed to be angry and surprised about this bee being alive. I mean, I drop an F-bomb. Aren't I supposed to be surprised? Yes, but like bored surprised, like. Look, just don't have any emotion, okay?
Mr. Spock conveys more emotion at his least emotional than these guys. It is...
Yeah.
It was a challenge to act this, so maybe I'm just being harsh on Anthony Mackie and Margaret Qualley in their acting ability here, but to make this work, I mean, you could have had some of the best actors and actresses in the history of film, and they'd have struggled with this. And it also didn't help that you have a non-existent score. There are tons of scenes that if you take the score out in any film or TV show that are terrible, but when you put the music back in, they become amazing. And the score at no point in this film is helping tell the story or helping the leads.
And that's an interesting point. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Thomas.
I was just going to say, I would think the best example for that would be Dunkirk recently. If you watch that movie without any music, I don't think it works.
Okay.
The music underneath it pulls you in and does a wonderful job at getting you to feel what you're supposed to feel and get you where you're supposed to be. This movie doesn't have that. It doesn't have any musical cues to pull you in, to give you feelings, to do anything. There's entire sections, and I'm talking long sections, where you don't have music, you don't have sound, you don't have a voice. You have just silence.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes that can work. If you ever saw No Country for Old Men, there is no soundtrack to that. Except for maybe a few background songs they play when they go into a bar or something. But for the most part, there's no soundtrack and it works great. But that's because the character, actors, the characters, and the story make it work.
The story. That's the key one.
That's the key. And the characters in there are really fun to watch. You're really, there's a bad guy. There's a good guy, Llewellyn. You really want him to survive. But
well, there's also a big thing that there's more than two characters. This film is, let's be honest, there's a few other characters who come in for what? Well, we have audio from one, and her dad shows up in some scenes.
Brief.
When it's flashbacks.
Yeah. It's
a four-person cast.
And really,
it's really just two, because the others are, I would consider, guests.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good
I mean, Tom cameos. Payne, you never see him. He's just a voice actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I was going to say about the music, I didn't even notice it. And that's sad. If you told me, what did you think of the score? I would say, there was a score? And that's really bad when you have a score, but it's so negligible because you don't even notice it because you're so bored with the movie. The score with, of course, as I said, with No Country, there's some, you don't really need it there. There's some movies that I guess can avoid it. But when you have just dead silence and no score, and it's the same as when you had a score, you've done something wrong. Yeah, I mean, you take an example of, with the exception of the sequel trilogy, John Williams pretty much is a mastercraft in everything. I mean, the sequel trilogy is forgettable with the music, and I don't think that's his fault. But when you look at everything else he's done, you can play a song and immediately know where that's from. And this, if you played a song, I wouldn't even have a clue. As I just said, I didn't even know there was a soundtrack.
You know, there's only so much you can do as the actor or actress if the director and the filmmaker is not helping you. I'll get in my second Star Trek reference for this week. Woo. Third, actually, because I had the motion picture.
I made Star Wars.
Season 3, I believe it's episode 7, there's an episode called Booby Trap. There is a scene that is highly dramatic, and it works because of an epic score that was written, I can't remember the guy's name right now, but epic, epic piece of score for this film that he wrote that makes you believe that the Enterprise is in dire peril. The whole scene is Geordi tapping the walls and reading out numbers to the bridge and spouting technobabble. And if you take that out, because they actually did that later on after Rick Berman decided score wasn't important, and they did a very similar scene with the same actor doing the same thing, and it doesn't work. It's a terrible scene. And that's the difference score can make. If you have a dramatic score that is cueing you in, a good score should be subconscious. You shouldn't even notice that it's there, even, you know? But it should... It should draw you in and set the emotion. And that's another failure of this film.
But you should notice when the score isn't there. That's how good it is. And this, if it's there or not, I don't notice. You know, we kind of slid into rips and picks and have spent a good chunk of this time.
I got one more.
Oh, okay.
One more rip. This movie has the dumbest character side diversion in a critical situation since Beth's quest for her first drink in The Walking Dead, where she almost everybody killed because she wants peach schnapps for her birthday as her first drink, and Daryl's going to go get that with her, or Carl's quest for pudding. Both of those happened in The Walking Dead.
Actually, I was going to think of Enterprise, the very last episode, where they're on their way to solidify this Federation. This is the thing that's going to make peace in the galaxy. We're going to go completely off to the side and help Shran find his daughter from four pirates.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, the quest to go visit the art museum when you have very limited time to catch the last shuttle ever off the planet is one of the most idiotic things I've ever seen in a film.
We have to hammer home the mythological reference, Scott.
And I would say the excuse was actually worse. That somehow inside the art museum is a buildup of helium gas. Really?
Yeah. Oh, so hard just so they could get their mythological reference meaning in.
Wouldn't you want to go to like the Goodyear blimp fueling station?
Well, apparently everything else has survived, so I'm sure that did.
Yeah, it's kind of like Battlefield Earth. Everything's still fine. We all abandon it, but it's fine.
Yeah, I kind of wonder about that. Why get a helium balloon when you're the last person on Earth? Just stroll over to Goodyear and borrow the blimp.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so come on. You who's going to stop options. You?
Why don't you get... Do you know how to fly a plane? Just take one of those.
Yeah, because apparently even without gas or an atmosphere, combustion engines still work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've done a lot of ripping. Let's do some positive picks here. And I saved the rips and picks, the picks for the end, because I'm pretty sure this will be quick. I got one. It's a good concept. And that's my pick. And and it looks okay. It looks okay. It looks nice. And it's a good concept. I'm done.
Okay. It has good scenes in it. I mean, admittedly, they're rare and far between, but there are scenes in there that I think are well done. They just happen to not really have much to do when the actors are actually talking. Because when that's going on, the director told them not to do anything right. But I think the walking around and I guess the atmosphere setting wasn't done badly. That was a good job done.
I got nothing. I don't usually say I got nothing, but I got nothing good to say about this film.
Awesome.
I don't believe the setting is correct because I don't feel that this is an abandoned world for the majority of it. We get down to the remainder of the city where it looks like that a bomb was dropped and there was a split second catastrophic event rather than people just in order evacuating the Earth. So it looks like just civilization stopped at one moment instead of what it did, which was gradual. So the setting doesn't work for me. The score is terrible. You have no protagonist, you have no antagonist, you have no plot, you have no objective, you have no conflict. The motivations of none of the characters make any sense. You got a scientist who's going to stay behind on Earth forever because he thinks with 35 people, he's going to fix the Earth. I mean, it's toxic. And we're going to grow, we're got a bee colony sitting up in the mountains where there's nothing for them to go pollinate? They were gone a long time ago. A main character who discovers that she can will herself to breathe pneumonia because her dream powers told her so?
Ammonia.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Ammonia. I'm sorry. I'm so worked up. I said pneumonia. ammonia.
Whatever. It's the same
thing. I think you would get pneumonia from breathing ammonia, but hey.
And it's supposed to be a world that is fallen. And we, you know, we got all the computing technology in the world that we want. And we got a telescope that's powerful enough to get that good of an image of Jupiter? Because the Hubble isn't getting that good of an image from Jupiter. Yeah, she's got the Hubble telescope in her enclave.
Yeah. Wow. Right. We have the most powerful telescopes now.
I just don't get it. And the motivation of Micah is to come tell off the doctor because he stayed because of the doctor and his wife died. And then we find out that he's piece of garbage too because his wife was dying and he told her he had no food, so she died quicker so he had food.
Wow.
He's not a likable character in this film.
Nope.
No one in this film is likable.
No one's good.
I told you where's the hero? Where's the good person? There's nothing. It's just it's almost as if you told a story about I got into an argument with my wife while eating a breakfast cereal and we both went to work.
That might be more interesting.
There it is. That's the story, except, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Argument's a bit too emotional. Let's say I was eating cereal and my wife was having toast while we were discussing
Your weekend plans.
No, because that might get too exciting. While we were discussing, let's see, the weather for the day.
Oh, exciting.
If you get, you know, Asimov Science Fiction Magazine, this should have been one of like the 3-page lead-ins that they do. It's not a novella. It's not even a short story. It's just one of these 3-page things where you don't even name the characters.
Yeah.
And you don't even need Micah. You could just do this in a 3-page short story about Sam and have her realizing she can breathe the ammonia atmosphere at the end for some reason. Then it might have been okay.
If this was a 15-minute long short film, or maybe a half hour, I think it could have worked.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, this would have been a good 5 to 10 page piece of short fiction.
And then you throw out some concepts like you want to give us something to think about, but then you don't follow up with it. So we've got the dad that says, human connection. Nothing else matters. There's nothing else. And she says, that's what you used to say about science. So this could have been really interesting about her learning a lesson that human connection is more important than the research that she's doing. And she could come to that realization at the end as she leaves Earth and realizes that the planet's just a place where your feet are. But the things that matter in life is this human connection. And she could have been with Micah and their child living out an actual life with a future. And a chance for her child to have happiness and meet someone and love someone. What her father was bemoaning that didn't happen to her. Instead, she doesn't learn the lesson. She's supposed to be in love with Elon. She's supposed to be in love with Elon. Elon's supposed to be in love with her. You're clearly not in love with her because you're going to take off for 10 years to Alpha Centauri because being an explorer is more important than having a life with the woman that you love.
They sound more
she
like,
doesn't love him. They're pen pals.
They sound more like that or colleagues, like work colleagues is what they sounded like.
Yes. Like if she loved
that's
him.
A long distance relationship of long distance relationships.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You know, I really love you and I want to come see you, but I got to raise these bees up here on the mountain. So that the last 20 people on Earth
could stay here.
Can have a massive incest repopulation building if I can get some atmosphere back.
You know, this is all getting really close to what, before we close out and rate this, to a, well, that was an attempt at a Scott's deep meaning right there. You started with something good, but then you pointed out how it just fell flat on its face. So let's give Scott a challenge to do, 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 do. This is hopefully Scott's deep meaning.
Might come out more like Deep Thoughts with Jack Handy.
Well, let's try it.
So, Micah is trying to tell Sam at some point that humanity used to, they say at one point humans used to have 2 faces and 4 arms and 4 legs. And split.
Oh, yeah, I know about that.
And once we were split, at that point, we've spent the rest of our life trying to become whole. And I think they were trying to talk and make a case that humanity, on both an individual level and a societal level, is trying to put itself back together into some unified state. As an individual level, we're looking for that other half that completes us and fills in that missing part of who we are.
Soulmate.
And sometimes we're lucky to find it, and some people don't. But you're always looking for that. Very few people are committed, chosen. No one is usually living that life by choice. Some are, but the majority of us aren't. And I think that the other thing that he might have been trying to hint at is human society has been trying to put itself back together into one unified society and overcome our divisions so we can act as one ever since it was divided up. And that could be back to getting basically kicked out of the Garden of Eden or the Tower of Babel. And the nations were set against each other, and we've been working forever to try to unify us as a society, as a species, and as an individual to become whole.
Wow, you're digging. You're digging, because I think this film tried to, and I repeat, tried to come up with some deep meanings like that, and tried to put them in, but I think it failed.
It would have been a better film if they tried to put in both of the deep meanings that I was starting with.
That was Scott's deep meaning.
Scott's edited deep meaning.
Well, and by the way, I would say that your deep meaning here was better than the one for Star Crash and Armageddon, because at least there was some substance for you to work with and make it up instead of just pulling it out wholesale from cutting it whole cloth from your butt, which you had to do for Armageddon and Star Crash. So,
yeah, look, I felt better about trying to find a deep meaning in Star Crash. I do feel there was some type of commentary on the criminal justice system.
No, there wasn't. It was just a movie.
I don't even think there was an attempt at meaning here. I think this was just a blowhard teacher trying to talk about Greek mythology to sound cool.
Well, that probably.
Nothing here made sense. Supposedly at the end, Sam is supposed to be Leda, giving birth to Helen of Troy. So the daughter's supposed to be Helen of Troy, and Micah is supposed to be Zeus as the swan in disguise. And
what?
Yeah, the problem is,
doesn't make sense.
Even if the daughter's Helen of Troy, what's she going to do from there?
Well, plus I thought Helen launched 1,000 ships when she was kidnapped by Paris, and that sent Menelaus after her. How does
Leda
this even
gave
relate?
Birth to the children of the gods? So, like, is Micah going to return time and time again in different disguises as Zeus?
It really is a weak connection.
Are we now telling us that we're about to have a giant war over what? There's nothing left.
Yeah. It'll be
what's Troy?
It'll
Troy
be the smallest war in history.
What was it? Was it Kronos who came back and ate his children? So if Micah's Zeus, does he have to come back and eat his children?
Yeah.
So that they don't kill him?
That was Kronos.
I want to eat his illegitimate children.
Don't remind me how screwed up Greek mythology is, okay? Greek mythology is screwed
very much.
You don't like it? You can turn off your station.
So I think we've torn into this enough. If I were to summarize this movie, I'm going to quote something Scott texted. Essentially, Scott said something to the effect of, "I watched paint dry in the time it took this movie to get anywhere." So I think that's the best way to explain this movie, that you should be watching something good. You should be watching something profound. You should be seeing a concept work out, but instead you'd rather just watch paint dry. Which means if we're going to go into rate it, which I guess we'll rate it by
How many dry walls?
Okay,
painted
cool.
Walls.
Which one? Which one are we doing?
How many dry painted walls?
How many dry painted walls? Okay. So how many drying walls or dry painted walls, whatever. For me, it's clearly going to be, I would say, 2 or 3, because the concept's good. 2. The concept's good. It looks good. But at the end of the day, this was a lot like 2012 in that I was just dying for it to end.
Half.
I'm giving it a
half a painted wall. This movie is a pile of vomit. It's garbage. There is no story to it. There's no plot to it. There's no character motivation that makes sense. The setting doesn't make sense. I don't know what story or what meaning the movie's trying to tell you about humankind. It's a love story between two people who don't understand love. I mean, she loves someone so much that she stayed on Earth to raise bees. He loves his wife so much he hid food from her so she died faster. Her love interest loves her so much that he flew off to Alpha Centauri and said, "We can still be with each other, but not until we're really, really old. If you ever get off that planet." The people of Earth love the other people of Earth so much that they're going to cut off all communication and relay and contact with them if they don't get off the planet soon. There was no delay in the shuttle launch either when they had to move it due to bad weather. It's garbage. There's no antagonist. There's no protagonist. There's terrible use of score. And you have two of the most unlikable characters ever. You've got nothing in here to make a good story. I don't even have a MacGuffin. Give me a MacGuffin at least. I got nothing. I got absolutely nothing. I said one character's motivated to tell off the doctor that he blames for killing his wife that he listened to stay before he hops the last shuttle out of here. And her motivation is to raise bees and finish her father's work, even though her father said it's useless, or go kill another pig by seeing how long it can breathe ammonia air too. It's just a garbage movie. It makes no sense. Nothing in this movie makes sense in any way, shape, or form. This movie is, it's garbage. And usually I say, if you like this garbage, that's okay. But apparently Netflix has a Scrooge McDuck-like vault of gold coins that they're just going to fire out to people who have a movie. So you know what? Hey, Netflix, I have a movie. Somehow I'm in the Great Pyramid of Giza, and I uncover a hidden chamber that has a flash drive stored in it that has the final telling of a future war between the United States and China. But
you're already way too interesting, so stop right where you are.
And somehow it leads back to the first emperor of China's tomb, and we find out that he really did figure out immortality, and he built all of that stuff because he's been waiting there until this moment in time to return with his reincarnated terracotta army to take over the Earth.
This is a way better concept than what we just watched.
Well, I'm going to shock both of you.
Uh-oh.
I'm giving this 0.
Oh, that's not shocking at all.
Okay. Well, I
was expecting you to say 5 or something.
It's not worse than Star Crash, and it's not worse than Geostorm.
I believe I gave those negatives, but I have very rarely handed out a 0. Oh.
Okay, that's true.
So I'm saying, let's say it's shocking for me. It's a 0 for me. I'm saying this was a waste of time completely. That the redeeming factors in this film don't do enough. There aren't enough redeeming factors to even give it the satisfaction of, oh, at least I've seen it. If you sickies are thinking of seeing this, please don't. Save your time. I'm going to be honest with you that this movie is not that good, and you will probably regret it.
Sit out in your backyard and watch your grass grow. You'll be more entertained.
Or fireflies, either way. And you could watch Firefly too. That's a way better idea. But I think it's safe to say that
it stinks. Yeah. Stinks. It stinks.
What more can I say about that? So, however, I want to say, but with all bad things, there must come a good thing, at least this time. We started off with a great movie, Book of Eli. We went to a slow, sluggish one. Next week, I think I'll announce it just to whet your appetites and give Scott some hope. Next week, we're going to be doing something a little more fun. John Carpenter's classics, Escape from New York, and if we want, we could do Escape from L.A. We could chuck them in together.
We already did Escape from L.A., but I'm fine with retouching Escape from L.A.
We'll just
that
touch
was a
upon
long
it.
Time ago.
Yeah, we'll touch upon that, but we haven't done Escape from New York, so we're going to be covering that with Snake. And I don't mean the Metal Gear Solid Snake, although, let's be honest, they're the same guy. So,
the same character.
Yeah, let's just be honest. I mean, he's Iroquois Plissken. What else are you going to do, right? So that's what you can look forward to next week. In the meantime, for sickies, I know we probably mentioned this, but I'll mention it again. We did do an co-op interview with Ethan over at the Age of Geek. I don't think that is released yet, but keep an eye out for that.
Air date for that is going to be the end of August. I want to say August 30th, if I remember correctly.
You should be listening to the Age of Geek anyway.
Yes, listen to the Age of Geek. Give it 5-star reviews.
Yeah, but in the meantime,
like you should have given us already. Yeah,
exactly. But in the meantime, listen out for that, because that was a really fun time with Ethan. In fact, expect him to jump on this show at some point. I got a good plug for him when to come back. But keep an eye out for him. It was a lot of fun being with him. And Ethan, if you're listening, thanks for having us on again. We'll get that shirt out to you, I promise, along with a coaster.
Do we have any coasters left?
I have coasters left. I have like 3 or 4. Cool. So I'll just send him one.
Don't tell Don. Don't tell Don.
No, Don's got the special collector edition one. There's only one special collector edition one, and he's got it. And if you happen to be the person that received the free shirt and are tuning in, welcome and enjoy your free shirt. Whoever you may be.
That's our new brilliant marketing campaign. We just sent out 300 shirts to random people.
And and by the way, if you receive said random shirt and you are listening now and like what you hear, give us a comment at...
at RavingLunaticMedia.com. That's RavingLunaticMedia.com. That's RavingLunaticMedia.com.
Right. And I miss this, but I just have to do it because I can't help myself. A good way to think of Io, the last on Earth, is great concept, but... unfortunately.
What's left for them to do, Rage Master?
Stay sick, sickies.
And watch out for Carol Baskin.